Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
And so endeth another USTA Pro Circuit season. Of which Noah played, I think, two events. So really, I mean, everything worked out just the way we expected it to at the beginning of 2021.
Honestly, there was a bright light, and I was like, oh, we're going to end on a high. It's all going to be fine. But you know what? It is what it is. Yeah, we're just moving. There's actually nothing left to say about that. But I'm feeling okay. I enjoyed hearing your voice. It was soothing. Wasn't as much turmoil as I expected to be honest with you.
I agree.
Which I don't even know if it was disappointing. I think we, you know, it was one of those things we needed a movie and we just needed to smile with it. You know, one of those times you just watch that movie.
Ted Lasso. We needed Ted Lasso.
And I think we got parts of it. I think you could say what you want, but Stefan Kozlov making kind of this move out of what has been a roller coaster of 3-4 years for him, was a
2 years ago at 550.
550 was a Ted Lasso moment. How did it feel watching it?
Let me just say real quick, we are going to have the post-match interview with Stefan Kozlov here in the space in just a couple minutes. That's what will be our guest interview this week, along with, I'm also going to add Christopher Eubanks from the week before in Knoxville. So that will be what we have for you. Yeah, I actually have control over this. We're going to have Stefan Kozlov and Christopher Eubanks interviews coming up. Watching it. Did you watch the final?
I could not watch the final on Sunday.
Okay. So let me just say, the first two sets between he and Alex Vukic were extraordinarily high level. Like, really, really good tennis. And then the third set was just kind of like, who could hold on the most,
right
like everybody has 10 fingers and each one just keeps like falling off. Stefan Kozlov is a different human being now. I think he's hardened a little bit in terms of just what has allowed him to scrap and claw his way back here, and I think that has made him tougher, more resilient, more forceful about what he wants to do and how he's going to do it. And I think it is to his credit that he has not quit, that he has truly scrapped, clawed, done whatever it's taken to get to this point. You'll hear him talk about it in the interview, but I mean, he says he's without a coach. He's just using his dad at times, Chris Wettengill at times, and just his friends at times to just draw strength and inspiration while he's
playing tennis and playing it hard.
And the adaptation of the forehand now, so it is truly a weapon from really awkward, weird spots. Mm-hmm. Like he can do different things now on top of the skill set he already had. It's fascinating to watch. I think I posted it after the Charlottesville win, but some of the pictures I've have of him at 15 and 16 years old in Sacramento then in Maui, and just like he was just this little kid, you know, really. And now he is a man, and he has gone through it. We talked to him here on the podcast. We had him on the pod, and you know, you heard some of his stories then. It's quite a transformation, and really moving 200 spots in 4 months in the rankings as they are now is unbelievable.
Yeah, I didn't even want to go into the negative side of things quite early on, and I know this is just the beginning, but yeah, I was curious how he felt about working as hard as he did and only being 150, while he should be higher than that in the rankings. I know Eubanks is another one that we saw kind of move up towards the end, and you know, we really, I think we early on thought that the rankings would drop off and people would kind of move up, but it doesn't seem like that's the case. It seems like you have to work that hard this year to kind of get to 150, and that's going to be it. I mean, there's a lot of players around those rankings. But again, this is a positive. We want to smile. And I don't know if we're going to get the answer from Stefan. I heard some of the conversations with you, but really what that turning point was. You know, I want to talk to him kind of for behind the racket and see what we can, you know, squeak out of him. But, you know, what change? What was that, you know, that light switch moment for him that he just flicked it and said, this is what's happening. I'm not quitting tennis, and I'm going to be back at that level. But what a tricky sport tennis is for us to say he's hardened and matured and old, and he's 23 years old. You know, that's the sport tennis is, and that shows just how many years Stefan has been a part of this sport professionally as well.
Correct. Yeah, and to answer your question, right now in the race, the year-end race, which just counts obviously this year's rankings, for those of you that are not familiar, he's at 159 officially right now.
Right.
In the race, which is just this year's points, he's at 122. And almost all of that has come in the last 4 months.
And people would like to say that's not a big difference, but that is a tremendous difference. With tournaments, with getting into, you might squeak into 250 main draws every once in a while, definitely being qualies. It's a big difference. And I think we're seeing that, so I don't want that to discourage anybody away, especially a Stefan who made a push here. But
he's got nothing to defend the first half at all.
Right.
So he top 100 is very realistic for him, and that's crazy to think about.
But he has a first Grand Slam main draw debut.
Yes.
At the beginning of the year. I mean, that's the way you want to start a year.
It's unbelievable to think about the fact that Stefan Kozlov never got a wild card to the US Open, didn't qualify one of those years when he was 115 in the world.
Right.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Easy to think about it.
Yeah. No, actually an insane road that he's been on, but he's here, and this is also the beauty of tennis. You know, you're not making it on a team. You don't have to fight your way for a contract. If you're there and you're winning tennis matches, you're in the count. So it's I'm excited for him.
Before we get to the two interviews, let's quickly hit on a couple of the main topics of the sport as we see them right now.
Yes.
Obviously, Peng Shui. There have been some fantastic podcasts that I've seen, some great articles. There's nothing that you nor I can offer the situation here that hasn't been discussed in detail. I think, obviously, both of us are greatly concerned. I think the little IOC video that they had with her is not nearly enough, considering the IOC is essentially in bed with the Chinese at this point because the Olympics coming up in about a month and a half. It's obviously disconcerting, scary, and I don't know that we have anything else to offer except our thoughts are there.
No, it was how everything transpired and kind of watching the situation unfold. Talk about a movie. This seemed like a different type of movie. This seemed like, you know, something that you pop on Hulu and check it out. But
and then Liam Neeson is there trying literally to find Peng Shui.
And so this is not enough right now. I'm glad the tennis community kind of came together, but this has been off the court within tennis has been a interesting year. I think there's been a lot of holes poked in the system of tennis that we spoke about probably now 2 years ago, a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
You know, between the domestic violence, which Zverev coming out on top.
I'm gonna get to that in a second.
Yeah. And then now, scary. But I hope the tennis communities can come together, and I hope ATP and WTA, with WTA being a leader almost in finding their voice, hope ATP can follow, as you know, with the ITF as well.
finally, before we do the Kozlov and Eubanks interviews, you mentioned it. Zverev winning yesterday. I think we can all agree on the court now, Zverev is probably one of the two, three best players. I think you're now in a situation where it's Djokovic, Medvedev, and Zverev are your three right at this point, with who knows if Nadal, and I don't think Federer is ever going to be close to that level again. Right. Nadal, maybe. That's on the court. I have not had anybody yet, Noah, who has been accused of something as serious as domestic violence, sexual assault, something along those lines. I imagine it is a very challenging time when somebody you consider a friend is accused of something very serious. Mm-hmm. I would like to think that if that happens, I will try to offer my counsel and support for my friend as much as possible. But I also don't need to go on social media and start posting about how what a terrible thing has happened to my friend.
Right.
And Novak coming out yesterday and posting this thing, he's been through so much off the court. I get it. Trying to support your friend is important. Trying to be there for the people you care about is important. You got to read the room, man. You got to read the room.
I just don't know where to. This is the top of the sport, and since we're such a star-driven sport, I don't know where to go from here in terms of what is the next step. If you're not getting these guys to kind of take that stand, this is all the world sees in men's professional tennis. They're not seeing the 75 guy in the world. They're seeing Novak and Zverev, and Novak, you know, vouching for this man and his character and saying what an amazing person he is. Just not the time. You know, just not the time. And
offer your support in private. I get it, but this is pretty damn serious, man. You don't need to say that he's been traumatized by something off the court when, frankly, he very likely, it appears, has traumatized another human being.
And you can say what he wants, but he's, you know, we talk about the emotions that's running through Zverev's head during this time. Obviously hasn't impacted him, you know, with the year that he's had. So just not the time. And for Zverev to end it with, you know, we understand the vaccinations, but hopefully Novak can get an exemption. I'm just like, what are we doing right here?
I didn't even think to add that into our discussion.
Yeah, so there's nowhere to really go with it. I think I'm extremely disappointed with where the sport is. Again, if you go back to our podcast a year and a half ago, we were talking about the holes that would be poked, you know, how certain areas of tennis would be highlighted during the situation. And I think it's worse than both you and I ever expected it to be.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but
it's just,
I'm a pretty pessimistic guy.
That is true. But I mean, just the past 3 weeks, it is truly remarkable. Yeah. So
it's been disappointing and depressing. And I remain hopeful for 2022 to get to a better place. I actually am optimistic in some way, shape, or form. But yeah, it's
the last bit I'll put in, and then we'll take it away from some of that, is just tough on the players right now. You know, there's no schedule yet. We're unaware of what's taking place. And I think for the fans to understand that here we are getting ready for preseason, trying to prepare. We don't know what anything looks like. We don't know when our first tournaments will be. We have finally got an understanding of what Australia could look like with the 250s as well and challengers, but that's just Australia. That's just those guys there. And they still don't understand the vaccination. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty going into 2022. We can be positive about it, but it's going to be an interesting road.
Yeah, Riley tweeted about it sometime last week, and actually got a lot of criticism of people saying, you know, well, we're still in the midst of a pandemic. And I think that's a very important thing to say, that we still are very much in the midst of it. However, when you're about a month out, considering especially when does the cut come out? Three weeks before 250? I mean, you got to make some important decisions, especially about travel around the world.
Yourself. You're not with a team. This is on you.
Right. So those are pretty important things for I think the players to decide, especially for challenger level players whose the money is obviously so tight right now. So I think that's a valuable thing. Kudos to Tennis Australia for instituting the vaccination requirement. Mm-hmm. I think that is a bold stance that needed to happen, and I applaud them.
We will see what players will do.
I wonder what the cuts are going to be. I think the women's cuts are going to be pretty close to normal. I think the men's cuts are going to be a little bit worse.
You said 275. I think we could see a three. I think we could see.
You think you could see a three for Qualis?
I think we could see a three for Qualis.
Maybe. I've got a list that I'm compiling right now, Noah, of guests for us to get in the off season. I know you're not there yet. You're very much in your Islanders gear and groove right now, which I respect, trying to get into hockey world. But we've got some guests that we've got lined up along the next couple of weeks that we're going to get to. I hope all of you in the States have a very happy Thanksgiving. Those of you, is it Boxing Day? Do we have a Boxing Day this week? You don't know? No Boxing Day. What are you giving me? You have nothing.
Boxing Day.
You've got nothing. Yeah, it's a British and Canadian holiday, right? Boxing Day.
You're taking this out.
Oh, it's Sunday, December 26th. It's the day after Christmas. That's where my
okay.
Head
we'll
at.
Take that out.
No, it's fine. We're gonna leave it in. And I hope all of you celebrate well and eat well. We're gonna have duck. Don't tell my daughter. She won't be happy about that. What are you going to have?
Turkey, like a normal human being.
Yeah, you're missing out. Turkey's a terrible meat.
Okay.
Stefan Kozlov, Christopher Eubanks interviews coming up. Thank you for being a part of the Behind the Racket podcast.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Joined by Mr. Kozlov. You seem very nonplussed and very unimpressed by what you've just done, but I have to tell you, I completely am. Well done.
Thank you. Appreciate that, man. It's pretty cool to do it in front of you.
Are you exhausted right now? I'm trying to gauge you right now where you're at with your brain after this win.
Yeah, let's put it this way. The wild card was pretty heavy on me.
Yeah.
And I think yesterday was... a lot in terms of just honestly Knoxville was the worst for me, and then just every day since it's been a battle, and I it's been a challenge for sure for me and for JJ as well. And you know, long term we're going to grow from it, and we're going to, you know, use this experience down the road. And today was a weird match. It was an early start. I was tired. I was like not even here. I didn't feel like I was here. And I only won for one reason, and that reason was that guy in the Illinois that started yelling at me. I was checked out.
Really?
I was down a set and a break. I was kind of battling my own voice in my head.
Yeah.
Just not myself. I was the better player. I was just not myself. And then that guy made it personal, and that's when I knew I couldn't lose this match, and I went into beast mode.
That second set from 2-1 down was... I actually, if you go back and watch at about 1-2-1 in the second, I said, I think we're about to see Pete Kozlov, because I've known you well enough to know that like once something gets personal, yeah. I even brought up the Jordan meme.
And oh, I took that's that right. Personally. I like that one. I like that one. Yeah.
Like, I know you well enough. So what was it in those, that stretch, that four game stretch really, where you went from a breakdown to a breakup, that just what locked in terms of what you were doing?
Well, I mean, it started with, like, obviously I have a long way to go in terms of, you know, maturing and playing at the top in terms of, but I got some bad calls there, man. I really did. Obviously, we're never going to know for sure.
Yeah.
But back to back, and then this one, the late call, something felt like it was, again, I'm not going to say it, but it just felt off. Mm. And then I kind of vented a little bit, and then I started walking. I went no change. I walked over here, and some young guy, too, started charging at me, and that moment I knew that if Fook was going to win, he was going to have to go through a lot.
Yeah.
And I just locked in completely and just focused on being a beast, you know, focused on moving him side to side, focused on going quick in between points. So I just tried to take his lungs completely, and it looked like it worked, actually.
I think so, too. Yeah. And you told me in Charlottesville after you won that title, you talked about that MMA style that, you know, rip your head off. That third set, not the best tennis.
No.
That was physical. that was a gladiator type match. Who was going to have the legs at the end?
100%. 100%. I mean, I don't like to say rip your head off because I think someone made that a headline, and I don't want that to be a headline. But that's the concept. You know, it's kind of like the, you know, you watch the UFC and these guys are just taking blows and they're just hitting each other, and then after the match they have so much respect, and that's kind of, you know, no disrespect to any of my competitors. I'm just trying to, you know, he's trying to take from me today, and JJ was trying to take from me yesterday, and that's the mindset I'm having. So, not personal. You're not my friend. I don't care if you don't like me. And you're right. That was an ugly third set, really ugly. And that's the mental aspect of the sport. You know, that's what we all got to improve. And how many times have you seen the top players try to serve out a match, and like, you know, it happens. So, again, it's like you said, gladiator for sure.
What does it mean? First off, I want to say I appreciate yesterday the fact you said, I don't want to do an interview. I have one more.
Yeah.
What does it mean now that you're done, that you know that you're going to get to play in your first Grand Slam main draw?
It doesn't mean, it means a lot because of where I'm coming from 4 months ago. It's been a magical 4 months. It really has been. And I think, you know, we talk about this a lot. I know you talk about it. It's been a really magical, maybe two months now with results. I mean,
yeah.
Goodness, it's been a really amazing stretch here. But I feel like I owe it to myself to just keep working hard, keep fulfilling my potential. And I have so much motivation, man. I really do. I have a lot of motivation that from the times, you know, when I wasn't where, you know, and I just have a lot of fuel. And I hope that I can, you know, get after it next year as well.
There are a lot of people who reached out to me over the last 2 weeks who are so thrilled that you might have this opportunity. Like, I know that a main draw match, like a singular, it doesn't mean anything, right? It's
sure.
one match in the
sure.
grand scheme of things.
Sure.
But considering, I mean, 2 years ago, you're literally at 550.
Yeah.
Which is nowhere near where you can and should be.
Not only that, I mean, when I was 115 in the world, I didn't get a wild card into the Open.
Yeah.
So like, and there were so many opportunities for me to get a wild card into the Open. And I'm not saying that to, you know, victimize the situation, but I'm just saying that it was like, for me to never have played a main draw match is, it means a lot to earn it like this.
Yeah.
And for it to be in Australia, like I know I'm going to go out and put on a show. I hope I play someone big. I hope I get my potential to swing out and it would be fun. That's all. That's really what it is. And yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
I will say that Francis Tiafoe specifically for the last like 4 days has been asking me to do the math of the wild card chase
really?
For him so wow. that I could just tell him, here's what needs to happen.
Sure. He FaceTimed me.
That's the thing. Everybody's wanted this moment for you.
Well, look, Francis is one of the best human beings I know.
Yeah.
So that's no surprise to me. He actually FaceTimed me last night just to congratulate me and motivate me. And I've been telling him, because him, Mo, and I are super close. We've been best friends since we've been young. And I told him, like, bro, like, you're leading the pack. You know, he's leading the pack of the Wolves. You know, he's pushing every week, Vienna, final, right?
Yeah.
Just relentless stuff. And I have so much love for him. And he's always had my back and always supported me, where these other guys, once they made it, you know, quote unquote made it, they just acted different and they started just disgusting behavior.
Mm.
So I'm not going to get into that, but
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to ask you about that because we're supposed to celebrate right now.
Absolutely.
Talk about your team. It's a unique group you've got down there. Kaz, your parents, Chris Wettengel, his girlfriend,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a unique group.
It really is. There's no other way about it. I mean, I went to Europe a couple weeks ago before Kerry on my own. And then I asked Justin Atali to fly in. He's just a buddy of mine. I've just been asking like friends to fly in. So
yeah.
I really have. I mean, look, Wett's a super intelligent guy. I like being with him. But I really haven't had a coach these last 4 months. Mm. I've just kind of been structuring my practices on my own.
Yeah.
And understanding what I need to do. And then I've just been, you know, like motivation stuff. Like getting through matches is the biggest thing. Chris and my dad. Such a unique group, like you said.
Yeah.
Just can't make it up.
Three titles in what, three months, two and a half months. I mean, that's a ridiculous run, Kaz. It really is. You've put in a lot of effort, man. Well done.
Thanks, man. Yeah, just blessed, man. I'm trying not to think about it. I'm just blessed to be in this position. And it's been a, you know, like we talk about, it's been a long road. And I look forward to continuing for sure.
Yeah. Congrats.
Thanks, man.
Go enjoy some time. You're going to have some Thai food. You're going to do something fun tonight, or are you just going to get on a plane tomorrow morning and get somewhere warm?
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I like Chicago. I like the cold weather, actually. So
me too.
So it's a nice change up for a Florida boy. So we'll see what happens. But we'll definitely see.
Okay. We'll get to see you in Melbourne. I'm happy about that.
You're going.
I'm not this year, but yeah, I'm going to be watching.
Oh,
I'll be watching from afar.
Gosh. Okay.
Yeah. I know. I'm a little disappointed too.
I'm disappointed, man. I want you calling well, my maybe match again.
Maybe it's just that both of us can't be there at the same time right now.
Maybe. Who knows? It'll be interesting to see what happens with everything.
All right. That's Stefan Kozlov, champion here in Champaign, as he was in Charlottesville, as he was in Columbus, and that I guess that's it for the USTA Pro Circuit year.
Sure is.
You want to say goodbye to the people?
Goodbye. Thanks everyone for your support. I know it's hard sometimes to watch me, but I really appreciate the energy and I can feel it. Thank you.
All right, peace out, guys. All right. You want music in the background?
Whatever you want, I don't care.
You don't care. You're just ready to go to Atlanta. Mike Cation, that's Christopher Eubanks, champion here in Knoxville. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
You talked to me multiple times this week about the idea of pressure in terms of the way you are able to implement it within a match. I imagine that was probably about as close to perfection in that regard as you could ask for.
100%. I think I executed it from beginning to end pretty much as well as I planned and would have liked to, put it that way. Just first off, having to serve well, something I felt like I did extremely well, very high percentage first serves, won a lot of points behind it, and then just applying pressure on returns, making him feel as though he's under duress the entire time. And even into the second set, I know in some matches I've played, I've had a letdown early in the second set, getting broken, maybe even breaking myself. Wanted to really drive home field, even told me before the match, like, hey, if you get the first set, let's try to stay on it and not, you know, just give away a break early in the second set. So I wanted to stay on it, and then with that really long service game, wearing
seven deuces,
he was scratching and clawing to be able to hold. But even after not getting that break and having a second serve return on the forehand and missing it, and I think I had maybe two break points in that game, even after not getting that break, I knew if I came back and I held quickly, I knew his first serve percentage might drop because he had a very high percentage of first serves even in that game. I was just able to kind of read it. He held. I came back. I held it either love or 15. I know it's the first two service points he missed his first serve. So I knew that I was going to be in there at that time and then just kind of compound pressure over time just usually hopefully plays into my favor.
A second of those break chances in that seven-deuce game, you decided you knew he was going with the second serve out to the backhand wing. You decided to run around it and you missed.
He was a little hesitant. I didn't fully commit to it. I kind of wanted to be able to react in case he went T, and I think if I had committed fully to it, I don't think I would have missed it because I was still falling over a little bit. Did a better job on the next game. When I did break, I said, all right, if I see the toss go back, I'm jumping. And I jumped. I had the forehand. I went after it, and luckily it went in.
Thank you for answering my question before I even
had to. Where you were going with it.
It looked like you were just prepared and absolutely set. The game plan coming in, I mean, how much do you adjust from player to player now because of the fact that so much is really dependent on you?
Not that much, honestly. I think certain guys, especially a lot of the American guys, I know them. They know me. Sure. They know my tendencies. They know where I might serve on big points. They know where I might like to take my forehand, things like that. Those are the times I have to do a little bit extra thinking and adjusting. When I'm playing somebody for the first time, like I was today against Daniel, I kind of felt like, yes, you can look at video, you can scout, you can do all that, but there's a difference between being on the court and seeing it. Like even in my match with Bjorn and Christian, like those are guys I know. They know me pretty well, so I have to kind of do a little bit more adjusting there. Today, I felt like I could just kind of come out and play free. Didn't really have to think that much. Said just execute, make a high percentage of first serves, and then you should be fine after that. And pretty much that was the game plan.
So when you do have that going in, I mean, you also know what a pretty predictable scouting plan is going to look like for somebody who's a first-time opponent, right? I mean, you kind of have that idea. So how do you counter that?
You're saying what their scout is going to be against me?
You kind of know what people are going to think,
right? Yeah, you know what they're going to do, but I think I'm pretty fortunate, and I have a game style that allows me to take the racket out of their hand.
Yeah.
So it's you can prepare all you want, but if I come out and I'm executing how I know I can, it's still going to be pretty tough. That's just the way that I try to look at it. I said, yes, you can scout, you can do all the analytics, you can see tendencies and all that, but there's a strong difference from being on the other side of the court and having to actually make the shot just because you know where it's going. I think my weight of shot might not really come through on video or analytics or whatever. So I
think that's right.
I don't think that much about it.
Our friend Colette Lewis pointed out when she was tweeting about the match after you won, when you won Orlando, when you were in the middle of the summer, you were really struggling at that point to get into U.S. Open qualies for any slam, and now you've moved up. I think you're going to end up either two or three spots behind your career high at the end of the year.
Maybe what? I should have played champagne, huh?
I wasn't even going to ask that today. But what has allowed you... You said in Orlando the idea of just playing free and being who you are. What has allowed you to continue that momentum to get to this point here today?
Honestly, I just think the confidence is there. I think my confidence is somewhere that it hasn't really been before. This week, we didn't have the mindset of, you know, kind of play free and just have fun like we did in Orlando, but it was somewhat similar. We would talk before the match, and we were just, after I got through the match with Vasek, I just kind of felt like I was finding my rhythm, and I found my rhythm on serve, and Phil would just say, hey, man, serve big or go home. Serve big and go home. That's it. And it just ended up snowballing into another match and another serve big, go home. And it was just so carefree. It was just out there playing tennis. I was out there maybe not having as much fun as Orlando, because Orlando I was laughing in matches and doing all the – and just kind of being super carefree. I definitely knew what was on the line today. Yeah. I wanted to get the title today. But all in all, I think I was able to stay very calm and very collected in the pressure moments. And I think part of that is just kind of being a bit more carefree than I typically am.
It's very rare to be able to end your season with a win, obviously. And I know World Team Tennis is coming, but your individual season, if you will, ends with a win. It also comes with it about a month until you next compete in terms of an individual competition. How do you maintain that? What do you take out of this week to then kind of push you in the off season?
That's a good question. Honestly, I think it's something I haven't thought that much about right now. I know I have World Team Tennis. I know I have 2 weeks of consistent matches. I think after that, we'll kind of sit down, we'll dissect. We, for one, see what the schedule is going to look like for early part of the year, because a lot of it's still up in the air. And then we just kind of plan around that. We plan on, okay, I want to obviously peak in Australia. What's coming after that? And then we say, hey, is it a good idea to, you know, maybe just play week after week after week after week? Or do we kind of be a little bit more specific and a little bit more selective with the tournaments I play? That's all stuff we'll figure out later. Right now, I'm just kind of just enjoying getting another title this year and ending my ATP season on a win.
You and I both give your coach, Philip Gresk, a very hard time.
Extremely.
Extremely hard time. He deserves it.
Absolutely.
Frankly, but it is a pretty unique partnership you guys have, being as close as you are as friends, former teammates at Georgia Tech, along with the coaching side. How do you maintain it so that this relationship stays strong? Because clearly it is working with two challenger titles here over the last few months.
I think we know each other well enough. We know each other. He knows when, and I'm no angel, he knows when I'm in a mood. There'll be certain things that he'll tell me that I know are things I'm supposed to do, but I'll just fight it just because I just don't feel like hearing his mouth. I'm not supposed to hit my forehand big. I don't want to hit my, I want to go all second serves. And he kind of knows me enough to know when to push and when to back off, and I think that just comes from being so close. But also, we are able to draw a pretty firm line when we're on the court, and I'm kind of in my normal state of mind where I'm just kind of open, like, all right, what do you want to do today? And he'll kind of tell me, and I'll give my feedback. There have been practices in which I come out and I kind of run point on it. Like, we'll be on the court, and we'll warm up, and then I'll say, all right, I want to do this. He's like, all right. Next, we finish that, I want to do this. Okay, all right. Next, I want to do this. And I'll run point, and then he'll just go at the end. Hey, at the end, let's just do a couple returns. And he knows when to push and when to pull back.
Yeah.
I think it just comes from being so close and just knowing each other. I think a lot of things about coaching isn't necessarily about – obviously, a lot of it is about the knowledge that's given, but it's also how it's given. It's do you know the player well enough to know when – what their buttons are, when to really push and when to draw back, and just having that relationship with them. And I think we have a pretty cool dynamic with that right now, and it's been working so far.
As I let you go, you're going to be heading to Atlanta for tonight, and I believe to Indian Wells tomorrow.
Tomorrow morning.
There's got to be some sort of celebration tonight, though.
No, really. I got a lot to do when I get back. I got a lot to do. I got a lot of laundry. I got to get ready and make sure
I think your coach disagrees with you, but
sure,
that's okay.
I got to make sure my serve is still popping for World Team Tennis. I can't let the New York Empire down.
Did they lose last night?
They did lose last night.
To whom?
They lost to the Orange County Breakers.
With? Who's on? I know who's on your team.
Steve Johnson, Nate Lammons, Amanda Anisimova, and Tatiana Maria.
It's not bad.
Not a bad team.
Not a bad.
Not a bad team. I look forward to going against them when I get out there.
I'm sure you would have been the difference.
I hope so. We'll see when I get out there.
Chris, thanks for everything this year. It's been fun. I appreciate personally being let inside every once in a while. That has been fun for me, so I appreciate that very much. And congratulations.
Thank you so much, Mike. Appreciate it.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.